From WVUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. They grew up in the booming 90s when life was good and the money ran like water. Now, the 20-something generation finds itself starting careers in a world it could scarcely have imagined. Dot-coms are gone, the economy has tanked, CEOs are being taken away in handcuffs. Abuses of power and moral failings are leading some to reconsider if they even want to be part of the business world. In this hour, we're sitting down with 20-somethings to find out what they're thinking about their careers, their lives, and the world after the boom. We begin tonight with a look at the unique challenges of life today for people in their 20s. Along with first jobs and apartment, there's plenty of angst to go around as college grads and dot-com alums move into a new world. 26-year-old Alexandra Robbins is co-author of Quarter Life Crisis, which is all about this topsy-turvy decade. I asked her how the economic culture shift and fears are affecting her generation.
Well, I think many of us started planning our career track during the height of the Internet age, when pretty much anything seemed possible. The slacker down the street was making millions of dollars as a CEO of his own company. And now we're dealing with a much different environment. It's culture shock all over again. Now we're dealing with a strong sense of dashed expectations and a fear that our current disappointment and disenchantment may come to characterize our entire adulthood.
Ooh, that's stiff. Are people making career plan changes in line with that outlook?
Yeah, from what I've gathered, I think a lot more 20-somethings, and I haven't been able to back this up statistically yet, but I think a lot more 20-somethings are going back to school as sort of a holding pattern. They know the jobs just are not out there. They know they may not be able to get the career they envision, so they're going back to school to try and figure out other pathways. And they're also moving into Peace Corps and AmeriCorps and other ways of both biding their time and trying to figure out something more meaningful for their lives.
We expect that 20-somethings are young and resilient. Are you seeing people bounce back or adjust to the changing expectations, the changing economic environment?
Certainly many 20-somethings are resilient and can bounce back and do. But many of us are sort of stuck in a rut that we feel is just exacerbated by the current economic landscape. And while we are optimistic, we are a hopeful generation, I think there's a lot of disenchantment right now, a lot of dissatisfaction with where we are, and a lot of feeling that we might not have the adulthoods that we had originally envisioned.
You've made the case, I guess, that that would be just a magnification of what's always a difficult passage in the 20s.
Yeah, but I think that the quarter-life crisis is more intense now than it has been in the past.
The quarter-life crisis, that's an early version of a midlife crisis?
Yeah, like the midlife crisis, the quarter-life crisis is a response to reaching a turning point in life. And in this case, the turning point is the transition between young adulthood and adulthood. The overwhelming identity issues of this age can cause intense, spiraling self-doubt, which can sometimes plummet into something as serious as depression.
Sounds like the stock market.
Yeah, some would compare them.
What are the symptoms? Are you saying that people, that 20-somethings, no matter, even when things are flying high, 20-somethings are up against a crisis?
Well, flying high is a relative term. People just assume that because you have your youth, you have everything else going for you, and they tend to gloss over the dark side of the 20-something years, which may be more intense now than in the past. One reason is that because there are more college graduates now, which increases the sense of competition and the feeling that we have to work harder than ever to stand out from our peers. Another big one is that many of us are saddled with tremendous debt loads from exorbitant student loans, which can add a huge amount of anxiety and panic to an already tough time of life.
So that means people don't have much choice but to get out and work and make a living quickly.
No, and we grew up with the sense that we should find passion in what we do. We're a generation that always heard, be all you can be, the world will be your oyster, and, you know, basically grew up hearing that we could do anything we want to do. And I think we also grew up in an age of increased navel-gazing that stressed a high importance on passion, on being passionate about your life and everything you do. So we're trying to figure out what it is we're going to be passionate about. We're trying to find a career that will be meaningful in our lives, but we worry that not only are we not going to be able to figure out how to get what we want, but also we might not discover what it is that we really want in the first place, which is an enormous fear among 20-somethings.
20-somethings obviously came of age in the boom 90s. Now the nation is in the midst of a big reconsideration of what that decade was all about. Is your age cohort going to be able to let go of the expectations, the free market attitude of the 90s, or is that just dyed in the wool now? Is it going to be with you right on through?
I think certain elements will stick with us. We're still going to have that sense of optimism, I hope at least, that we will be able to eventually get where we want to go. But I think we also have no choice but to get over it and to get over it quickly.
And in the career change front, do you see people walking away from corporate America? Is everybody ready to trade in Wall Street for a country store? What's the buzz around the latte bar?
I don't know about everybody, because there are certainly still many people I know, at least, who plan to retire by 35, and good luck to them. But I think that there may be a movement to come, given the current disenchantment with the corporate world, in which 20-somethings move to different fields in order to gain more personal fulfillment and better job security, because this is a time when we really need an anchor, and obviously jobs in the corporate world are not providing us with that now.
So do you feel ripped off or just introduced with a cold splash to life?
A little bit of both, I think. Certainly there's a feeling of being gypped, but we're also realizing that that's part of what life is, and we're going to have to get over that.
Alexandra Robbins, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Alexandra Robbins is 26 years old and co-author of Quarter Life Crisis, The Unique Challenges of Life in Your 20s. We're talking this hour with 20-somethings about what it's like to come of age in a world where corporate America has a black eye and its values are vilified. Now that a bear market has reared its ugly head, are you ready to say goodbye to the corporate aspirations and look for a new career path? Or are you confident that you can fix what ails American business by working on the inside? Parents, what kind of advice are you giving to your 20-something children? What career message are 20-somethings getting from America in 2002? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got a big, thoughtful group here tonight. Joining me from the Bronx in New York is Amit Shah. He's 24 and left his job at J.P. Morgan Chase to join Teach for America. With me in the studio is Murad Sofizadeh, a 25-year-old who is working on degrees at Harvard Business School and Kennedy School of Government, and Kristen Fitzpatrick. She's 27 and a second-year student at Harvard Business School. Good evening, Amit, Murad, and Kristen.
Good evening.
It's great to have you all. Amit Shah, let me turn to you first. You are 24. You got out, graduated from Duke not that long ago. You jumped into J.P. Morgan Chase and right into the whole world of deals. I think you worked on deals for Enron and Kmart. When you were in college, take us back. What were you looking forward to? What was your understanding of the world that you'd build a career in? And what did you find when you got there?
Okay, I think that when I was in college, I actually started off being pre-med for the first couple of years, took a bunch of science courses, and found myself 2 years into it, not really convinced that that was the path that I wanted to take. And so my junior year, I started looking into other careers, and investment banking, it seemed like a pretty interesting career where I would actually have that opportunity to still.
Let's see, what year would that have been, sort of a late
90s? That would have been about late 98.
When the magazine covers were all full of dot-com heroes and investment banker heroes.
Exactly. And I found myself at an internship at a small investment banking firm based out of Baltimore and started working in their e-commerce investment banking group in Reston, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And right at the height of the era in the summer of 1999. And following that year, my senior year of college, all the major investment banks came to Duke and gave their nice presentations, talked about the perks and the experiences that they had to offer young college graduates.
And you went for it.
And I went for it, yes. I think that for me, my main motivating factor was, well, you know, you might work extremely hard for 2 years, but you'd get to at least establish a great network of individuals in the corporate world, as well as have a steep learning curve where you learn a good base of research and analytical skills.
So, and now here we are, not too many years later, and you are out. You're working in the Bronx for Teach for America. Why? What happened? You jumped in? You jumped out. What happened?
That's true. Investment banking is a very intensive career, especially at the analyst level when you're at the, you know, just a fresh college graduate. And when I was working 80-100 hours a week over the past couple of years, you would see the market downturn. I mean, I came in at the peak of the kind of markets, and you would see the market going down right in front of your eyes over my two-year experience, and the deals were drying up, the perks were drying up.
What kind of perks, I mean?
Perks in terms of food allowances. For example, in the evenings, they became very strict about the amount of money that you could spend. Before, I think the limits were much higher than they are now. You would have the ability to use car service to go home in the evenings, so you'd get like a Lincoln Town Car or, you know.
And that went away.
Exactly. Those types of perks went away.
So your dream world was burning down around you.
Exactly.
Still,
and not only that, you have, yeah, you know, the layoffs that went along with the corporate downsizing.
Were there many?
Many layoffs. I think I went through maybe four or five rounds, and each one being just as taxing as the previous one.
And finally, you said to yourself?
And finally, I said, you know, I really can't take this anymore, and I need a nice, you know, I need a change that's going to be, A lifestyle change, and B, something that will be more rewarding for me.
And therefore, Teach for America.
And I've always wanted to be sort of a teacher, and I wanted to continue having a challenging experience, and I looked in the Teach for America and seriously gave that a consideration. I liked what I went through in terms of the interview process, the people that I had met, and I said, this is going to be a commitment that I would like to make for 2 years.
But that is a choice. That is a choice with a very different kind of forward-going financial trajectory than we usually associate with J.P. Morgan.
That's very, very true.
Any qualms about that, or are you going here for public service and direct value to your countrymen? What's your motivation now, Amit?
I think my motivation is that when I was looking through reflecting on the last couple of years in my life, I definitely had a very positive experience at J.P. Morgan in terms of the people that I met, very helpful, a great mentoring experience, as well as financially rewarding. But I think what I was looking for was I wanted to have a more well-rounded experience where that I could, you know, balance my private sector experience with the public sector experience and become a more open-minded person.
I mean, you started out college aiming to be a doctor. Then you aimed for investment banking and jumped into it. Now you're a teacher with a salary, I think, of $35,000. What do your parents think of this arc that your career planning has taken?
The parents were definitely very disappointed at when I first gave them the thoughts that I was going to be doing this Teach for America position. Being a teacher doesn't have the same type of status in our society as investment bankers.
What do your mom and dad do for a living, Amit?
My father and mother run a motel in North Carolina, a Super 8 motel.
So they no doubt scrimped and saved to put you through Duke and the rest.
Exactly.
And now you're a teacher.
Exactly. And
Are they coming around to seeing the beauty of that?
I think that I was, over time I had to do a lot of convincing to them in terms of, letting them know that this was the right move for me and this was something that I really wanted to do. At least for a two-year commitment. And then my mother was also, I'm going to be actually teaching in Compton in Los Angeles after my training ends here.
Oh, boy.
And
it's the real thing.
There's the safety issues that my parents were worried about also, as well as my friends.
Stand by. It's a great story, and you're describing a path that I'm sure you're not alone on, but I want to put it very quickly. We've just got a few seconds before the break. But to your age cohort here in the studio with me, Kristen Fitzpatrick, you're in business school. Give us an instant analysis of what you see in the Amit Shah story.
An instant analysis. I think he was probably not really clear from the get-go of what he wanted to do in life, and it was probably easier to follow.
Like most of us when we start.
It was easier to follow the herd and see what everybody else was doing than go out on your own and probably certainly take a lesser pay and less status and less of the rest of the population's idea of success and go out on your own. I think he made the right choice, and he'll be really happy at it.
The right choice for him, we'll hope. And Murad Sofizadeh, what do you think? Are you sympathetic with the choices that Amit has made, given the times that we're in, the changes?
Well, I think I am sympathetic, especially I think he made a very emotional choice, and he's lucky enough to be young, at this age, to be able to make this choice. And so I'm sure it's been a difficult choice. It's better to have this choice made earlier than later.
Amit, they're voting for you. We'll see what they're going to do. Is the new economy making you reconsider your career choice? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about and with 20-somethings reconsidering career choices after the boom. We're at 1-800-423-8255. You can join us. How does it feel to be launching a career in the bubble's aftermath after the boom? 20-somethings, did you take on student loans, assuming that a hot economy would make them easy to repay? And are you reconsidering your life priorities, imagining a new lifestyle, a new career? You can join us at 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight by three folks in their 20s who are all grappling with the issues that come with starting a career, starting a life. We just heard the story of Amit Shah in New York City, who went from J.P. Morgan Chase to Teach for America. We're also joined tonight by Murad Safizadeh. He's 25 and is working on a joint degree in Harvard Business School and the Kennedy School of Government. And by Kristen Fitzpatrick. She's 27 in the second year of Harvard Business School. Kristen Fitzpatrick, tell us your story. You haven't jumped. You're still in B school. You're still, as I understand it, aiming for a career in business. Is anything about the flames under the frying pan here giving you second thoughts, or are you committed to this?
I am committed to it. I think the only thing that's really changed is the direction that I am going to take in my education second year. Second year is all elective courses. We get to choose what we want, and I've signed on for the board of directors class and the moral leader and some extra accounting classes.
So some corporate oversight and some good old-fashioned accounting rules.
Exactly. I don't think ignorance is an excuse for letting anything slide, so I have signed up for some additional education.
Describe to us the peer pressure around your life choices right now. Do you hear, I don't know, your classmates or your friends who didn't go to B school saying, Kristen, did you notice that there's kind of a dark cloud around that realm right now? Is anybody giving you a hard time? Are people still as gung-ho in support of people on the business track as they might have been when you decided to go to B school?
I would say the support hasn't changed. In terms of, you know, my friends, I came from a non-glamorous background in the first place. We're all engineers, and most of us work in operations. I mean, I made Pampers and Love, so it's not exactly exciting.
You were with Procter & Gamble before.
Right. So it was never a hot career in the first place. So.
She made Pampers, and then she went to B school.
That's right. So, I mean, they're still supportive. I think they know me. They know my friends. They don't have any stereotypes that they're sticking to. So I think it's been the same reaction.
Have your role models changed? Were you looking to Jeffrey Skilling 2 years ago? Were you looking to the kind of big, hot business leaders who are now, some of them, in the hot seat?
I think a lot of my role leaders had always been more of the female leaders in society, so they certainly haven't changed. I think I look a lot deeper than the Business Week article on, you know, whoever's on the cover. And mm-hmm.
And assuming that all's golden there.
Right. I don't take it at face value. I kind of look a little deeper. How's their family life? What else did they have going on? It's more than just their corporate accomplishments.
Tell us the truth. When you decided to come back and go to B school, were you thinking this would have been just about the time, I suppose, when you decided that the market was starting to turn down, but were you driven by the notion that that you'd be a young business billionaire?
No, my idea of success has always been the impact that you have at the places that you work, and money hasn't been the driving factor in why I made this decision. It's very expensive to go to business school, mm-hmm. and certainly I'm taking on substantial loans, so I don't think, you know, in the next 10 years I'm going to be anywhere near where I was before I left P&G. So I think money's not it. It's really the experience that you get in the different people that you work with.
So you're hanging in. You're on track. You've mastered Pampers. You're on to the business school world, and you're not pulling off. Murad Safizadeh, you've been straddling from the beginning. You are enrolled in both the Harvard Business School and the Kennedy School of Government. Here's the private and the public side by side. Has the changing environment of business in the last year or so made you change your balance between the two?
Well, certainly so. Before that, before I came to HBS, I was thinking of getting a second degree, MPA degree, but I didn't apply until I got here, and I applied last year.
That's the public service degree, the Kennedy School side.
Yes, and my plan was to get, after graduation from HBS, to get some private sector experience related to energy sector.
Energy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. because I'm from Azerbaijan, and it's
big
very
oil
rich
fields.
Yeah, mm-hmm. In these resources. So I wanted to get private sector experience and then make a transfer to public sector.
And now?
And now I'm more inclined to go directly to public service if I can right after graduation.
Why?
Because I don't think that, well, I was actually at one point of time considering Enron as my choice of employment, and
okay,
I don't think
that would
I
be
can,
difficult now.
Yeah, I don't think that I can learn from these guys anymore. So I'm more inclined to go out there. I also had 5 years experience prior to business school. So I think I'm capable of implementing this experience in public sector right now, right after graduation.
But if the environment hadn't changed, if the headlines hadn't gone so far south, you might not have made this change in emphasis.
Yes, I agree. I was after I got accepted into Kennedy School of Government, I was kind of couldn't decide whether I would like to do it immediately or mm-hmm. maybe I can postpone it until after graduation from HPS. So it actually accelerated my decision.
Listeners, there you have it. One who's flown the coop out of J.P. Morgan and into Teach for America, one who's hanging tight in B school, and one who's leaning to the public sector. Not everybody even began in B school or thought of J.P. Morgan as their target. But we're interested tonight in how the changing environment, the changing news headlines, are changing your sense of what's going on in the working world, of what you'll pursue in your own career. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255 and mix it up with Amit, Murad, and Kristen. Patricia's on the line. Welcome, Patricia. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Good to have you.
Well, I wanted to just kind of follow up with what some points that your guest made,
yeah.
that the economic downturn last year. I work for Monster.com, and tomorrow's my last day.
Oh, boy.
The economic, yes.
And are you breaking out of jail, or are you sorry to go?
I'm actually going back to grad school, and I'm really, really excited with my decision that was basically a result of last year's layoffs that we had. And I just decided that this was the time to pick up and go do what I wanted to do because, you know, like your guest said earlier, we're from a generation that we were taught you can be anything you want, especially in America. You know, you can strive to be whatever you want. So
you're going from Monster.com, the bastion of high-tech employment and dot-com jobs, to what? Where are you headed, Patricia?
I'm headed to the Harvard Graduate School of Education for the International Education Program.
And what does that mean you hope to do?
Well, I hope to work with developing countries, specifically how education influences the development of countries. And hopefully my focus will be in Latin America.
Are you cutting back on your expectations of income?
Yes, I definitely am. I know it's been mentioned before that, you know, I do not expect to come out and make $70,000, even though I'll have Harvard on my curriculum. I do think that it's more rewarding to work with what you have a passion to do than, you know, maybe to have a huge bank account and a safety net.
Patricia, do you remember what was the high point of your dot-com expectations?
The high point was I came out of college and I moved to Boston and I speak French, and I decided that I was going to go into Monster and work and then make my way into the international department. And, you know, use my language skills to go into international business
mm-hmm.
and in the future do something that was very rewarding personally and in my work. But for the short term, you know, to kind of go out and create a safety net where I can be in the international business.
But the layoffs turned you around. Did scandal have anything to do with that, or were you already on your way out the door?
The scandals didn't really. I was on my way out of Monster when I found out that I got into Harvard, and which is a huge blessing. And what really, really got to me is the cutbacks in marketing that I saw, the cutbacks in our departments, our mm-hmm. expansion internationally. And I don't think just Monsters, but most companies out there were cutting back on their expansion.
I'm sure you're right about that. Patricia, thanks so much for your call. I want to put it to our guests here. Amit, Patricia was driven off largely by the layoffs she witnessed. You shared that experience seeing layoffs at J.P. Morgan Chase and other investment banking companies around you. What was the effect when you first saw the axe come down?
Well, I think that once I saw the axe come down, I mean, there was definitely low morale in the group that was working as well as around the bank. There was a lot of restructuring that was going on in terms of the various groups that were there. So positions were being flip-flopped. Deal flow had, you know, come to a halt, and there was just a lot more marketing going on instead of actual transactions.
But how did it hit you personally? Did you have cold sweats at night? Were you afraid you'd be next? Did you think, I can't count on this for the long term?
Well, I think, yes, I mean, during that time, I knew that there's just, you know, just no stability. It's a high-risk, high-reward type of position, especially, you know, coming into it. I knew that was going to be the fact, but when I came in, things were just so great. That the thought never even crossed my mind, and then over the past year, it kind of sets in, and I've been realizing that, you know, this might not be the best place to be if you
You just can't count it. There's nothing like a downturn to make you rethink what's going on around you.
Exactly.
Matt is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Matt. You're on the air.
Cool. Thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you.
I guess I have a little bit different perspective.
Okay.
I had always kind of known what I wanted to do ever since high school, which was computer networking, and kind of focused on developing relationships with different businesses, such as apprenticeship programs, and developing skills that would allow me to be portable. And I guess I did see kind of the downturn, you know, working for smaller companies in a network administration scenario. But I was involved with a lot of upper management, and I got to see a lot of different management styles, how CEOs ran their companies, how internal management structures were set up. And I was kind of able to shape my career towards focusing on portability, skills that would be very portable.
So have the developments of the last 9 months changed your mind or your path at all, or are you just set on your goal?
Well, they haven't really changed my path or my goal. I knew what I'm married. I have three kids. I'm only 24. I know what my goals are. I want to.
Oh, you're going for it, man.
Yeah, and what I really found helped me is focusing on developing my skills and work experience, because I found that's what a majority of companies, when downturns happens, are looking for, are very experienced people.
Matt, I want to ask you something, and don't take this the wrong way. I mean it with
sure.
a lot of respect, but you're into computer networking ever since high school. This means you're a tech guy. Is this typical? Are you like a geek down in the weeds of the technology, unperturbed by the storms above?
The storms above really don't bother me, because the last place I was laid off at, I was able to pick up at another company within a month and a half, 2 months, making more money than I had previously. And now, looking through the papers, there are probably 100 to 200% more positions available paying more money than I was making previously. I'm making mid-50s right now, and I'm hoping to move into state government, where the position that I have applied for and hopefully in good runnings for makes between $65,000 and $70,000.
Hey, nothing like the public trough, but it sounds like you've got your pole star fixed there, and good luck with the job and the family, Matt. Thank you for calling. Mirad Sofizadeh, here's a tech guy. Do you think it makes a difference? Are we seeing a split in 20-somethings between people who have the kind of engineering chops? Are they feeling as vulnerable to layoff, or are they feeling like all we have to do is hang in because technology is going to drive our careers?
Well, I think it changes from person to person. I think a lot of people know from the beginning what they want to do, and I think the effect that even this market turmoil or boom and the bust had on them, it makes you reconsider your goals, whether you are not being flexible enough for the new economy. Mm-hmm. And then a big part of those people, they made decision to move into industries like iBanking, financial services, mm-hmm. consulting, that they were never aspired to do. And now we're seeing that these people are forced to reconsider their goals. And
it was a money thing. It had excitement
exactly.
and glitz, and now they have to decide, do I really want to do this?
Yeah, and they come to better decision for themselves, mm-hmm. because they're in mid-20s, and they still have chance and time to change their career and move into the industry that they really want to do.
And maybe they're doing it. Kristen Fitzpatrick, when you look around at your classmates in business school, do you see classmates with different kind of focus? Are people with certain aspirations more likely to be wavering now? If they were intending to go into financial services, are they more likely to be looking at joining a commune? Or does it depend on what kind of business people have been hoping to shoot for?
I think the biggest thing that depends is if you were hoping to change functions. So if you were in consulting and now you want to get into marketing, it's it's a lot more difficult because certainly any career changer doesn't have the experience on their resume and they're not going to get looked at by companies that are hiring. So they're certainly far more affected. I mean, the venture capitalists and the entrepreneurs out there are certainly disillusioned and probably reevaluating their career plans right now.
So the flexibility going forward doesn't look the same as it might have. The number of options open to any given person.
The sky is not the limit.
The sky is visible, maybe even touchable. I want to bring Jason Crawford into our conversation. Jason is 22 years old. He graduated from Carnegie Mellon and is working now for a New York investment firm. Good evening and welcome, Jason Crawford.
Hello.
Hi. So how's it going? You're still hanging in there. Amit has flown the coop. You're still at the, is it an iBank?
No, it's just an investment firm. I work in new business development. I research new business ideas. And yeah, I'm definitely hanging in there and having a great time, actually.
How's it feel?
How does it feel?
When you talk to your old classmates, when you talk to people outside, when the kind of ugly headlines are looming around many things financial, do you feel tarred by that somehow or exempt from it?
No, actually, I feel like the whole thing is kind of overblown. I don't take this, you know, I was somewhat surprised by all the scandals, but I don't think it's an indication. You know, many people are taking it as an indication of widespread evil or dishonesty in the corporate world, and I just think that's blowing it out of proportion.
Do you see a backlash then?
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, in the media and, you know, especially in the government, the SEC is now, you know, looking at taking vast new powers for itself. I'm frankly fairly worried about what the climate is going to be in a number of years when my aspirations are I'd like to start a company of my own one day, and I'm really wondering what the climate is going to be. Are people just going to sort of assume that I'm evil because I'm a businessman?
So you may be the CEO who has to sign the bottom line, verifying the numbers.
Right, exactly. And, you know, and there are hundreds and thousands and hundreds of thousands of numbers. I don't, you know, even know how many go into an accounting at a large firm. And if one of them is wrong, then I'm accountable and I'm the SEC can freeze my salary while they've got me under investigation and everything. I mean, I really think that's, you know, fraud is fraud and fraud ought to be persecuted. But I'm worried about the this idea that people seem to have that all businessmen are sort of evil by nature.
Jason, you're 22, and you seem to be pretty well locked in to this career and a certain view. What got you on this track in the first place?
Business? I went into college, so as you mentioned, I was in computer science, and I went in mostly thinking I was interested in computers, and I'm still very interested in technology. I love software. But I think it was in college that I decided I loved leadership also. I really loved just putting an organization together. And I took an entrepreneurship class while I was at Carnegie Mellon and really liked it. I liked thinking about marketing and markets and customer value and things like that, and I just decided.
And given the backlash that you've described, do you have as optimistic a view of what your opportunities are in business now?
I beg your pardon?
Do you feel as optimistic, given the kind of backlash and skepticism that's out there now, about your opportunities, about how high the sky is?
Well, ultimately, yes, I am optimistic about my personal opportunities. I'm just, it's not even so much how high I can go. The problem is, am I going to be punished for it?
Yeah.
Or am I going to be suspect because I'm, suppose I become one of the most successful, just as a long shot, suppose I become one of the most successful CEOs in the country.
And get the get out of jail card or the opposite. Jason Crawford, we're coming on a break, and I know we've got to let you go. Thanks for joining us tonight. We're talking about 20-somethings reconsidering career choices. After the boom, you can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about 20-somethings, and with 20-somethings, we're reconsidering career choices after the boom. Is the new economy making you reconsider your career choice? Have you shifted your sights from the boardroom to the Peace Corps to public service? How are you dealing with life's bear market? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight from the Bronx in New York by Amit Shah, who's gone from J.P. Morgan Chase to Teach for America. And here in the studio by Murad Safizadeh, who is shifting his emphasis from B-School to public service, and by Kristen Fitzpatrick, who's sticking with the B-School line. You're welcome to join the conversation as well. Eli is on the line. Welcome, Eli. You're on the air.
Evening. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
By the way, Tom, I read your book, so I know you know something about entrepreneurship yourself.
I've been there and done that, Eli.
I've got sort of a an interesting view on this. I was in a successful high-tech company in 1998. I graduated college in 1997. Mm-hmm. And I quit and joined the Peace Corps.
Yeah, at the height of the boom.
Yes, I did.
So you're a real counter-trend man.
I was very bored. I was just fed up with it. I couldn't believe that people were doing this for a living.
Okay, so you can deliver us the sacred truth. Which is better, the business path or the Peace Corps path? Drum roll, please.
I can tell you I'm in business school right now.
I don't know what to make of you, Eli. Okay, what have you learned, a wise one, from your journey?
What have I learned? I've learned that what you do when you're in your 20s doesn't matter. All that matters is that you do it really, really well.
And what did you do really, really well in your 20s?
I was a good Peace Corps volunteer.
And what did that mean?
That meant that I was sent to West Africa, which is a country called Togo, mm-hmm. which I had never heard of either. And it was a very challenging place. We had an attrition rate of about 50%. Only about half the people who came lasted.
And were you digging ditches or building irrigation systems or teaching or handing out syringes?
I had a no latrine policy when I was there. I refused to do latrines. I was working with microcredits. I was helping them become profitable. And I did some financial training with local healthcare.
And when did you decide to go back to Peace School?
When I was in the Peace Corps.
So the current crisis and scandal wasn't really part of your calculation?
No, it had nothing to do with it. And
now that it's broken on top of you as you're headed back to Peace School, has it given you any second thoughts?
I think it makes me look very smart, which does not reflect on the truth of the decision.
How so?
Because I lucked out, because all of my friends are desperately trying to get into business school now, and they're having a remarkably difficult time. Because
everyone's trying to crowd in, you mean, to escape the stormy weather?
Because they all have the exact same resume, and none of them can cover their rent.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Eli, you're a counter-trend man for the evening, and we love your story. We thank you for it. Christian, do you hear Peace Corps and that kind of talk around campus these days? Are people looking at Togo and thinking maybe they'd be better off there?
People are looking at nonprofits. I mean, there's certainly, at least for the summer when we were looking at our internships, huge shift to nonprofit work since it's you're easily contributing right from the get-go. Mm-hmm. And they were hiring a lot more of us, so mm-hmm. Definitely a huge shift into nonprofits.
Mm-hmm. And Murad, here's a caller who's headed back into B School as you're headed off toward the public sector arena. Everybody's going where they want to go.
Well, exactly. Actually, the way I want to go is slightly different versus Peace Corps. I'm more interested in public administration, which
government work,
which involves managing the economy and many of the things that I learned here at business school. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right. People, just the crisis makes people understand and analyze and what they really want to do with their lives. And I think it's it has an opportunity aspect to it. So it depends on whether many people will make use of this opportunity and do what they really want to do.
And, of course, in a funny way, the B-School fixation is part of the 90s mythology itself. The fact is that an overwhelming majority of Americans and everybody else didn't go that way. It's just that business dominated the headlines so deeply. Christian, what have you learned about the world that you didn't expect since the change of the last year or two in the business climate, in the cultural climate?
Well, I don't think I was very in tune with business before I came here. I hadn't heard of Enron until the entire debacle started when mm-hmm. I was in school. So I have learned from the people that I've met and the experiences that I've had that there is just so much hope, truly, out there for the future of business. I mean, my classmates are phenomenal, and they've got just a wealth of experience behind them. So I think my opinion is better of business now that I know who's going to be leading us coming forward.
And even when you see what's going on right in front of us and the folks being led away now in handcuffs.
Sure. I mean, I think there are a couple of bad apples, and now it's just a time of surfacing the rest of the bad apples. But once they all float off, I think the general business climate is going to be better for it. People
you don't
will be
see
more
a
aware.
Systematic problem.
No.
Murad?
Well, I agree with Kristen in the sense that I'm more optimistic and in terms of after I see now my classmates and people that are here at the MBA program at Harvard Business School. But I disagree in the sense that I see more of a systematic crisis because the crisis of confidence, it cannot be attributed just to accounting problems. I think it's really a combination of different factors, including GAAP system being way too flexible and accommodating very different interpretation of accounting method. Also, unfortunate deregulation, where government really deregulated, liberated some of the industries, and couldn't make sure that specific pieces of new regulation are put in place. Such example of such deregulation could be in energy sector, in financial services, when abolishment of Glass-Steagall Act led to a combination of different industries in insurance, iBanking, and commercial banking. Mm-hmm. At the same time, government must have introduced a regulation to make sure there is no conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm. So there's something systematic going on, and we're talking about regulation now to meet it. Nami is on the line. Welcome, Nami. You're on the air.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
I'm happy to join the conversation.
Glad to have you.
I must say, you've been speaking as if, everything's fueled by America, and I'm American born and raised, but I entered business school based on experiences I had as a journalist, of all things, in Lebanon.
Why did that inspire you to go to B school?
Well, I initially went to journalism school, the George Washington University,
uh-huh.
and when I graduated, I thought I was going to come out and be one of the next Woodward and Bernstein, but as I was doing my my first post-college job in Lebanon as a journalist, I was really delving into stories where I didn't even have the basis of knowledge to ask the right questions.
And how long ago are we talking, Nami?
We're talking 98, 99.
So again, right at the height of the 90s boom, do you think you were influenced by the reigning notion of that time that everything was really moved by economics, everything was really moved by markets, and therefore somehow by business leaders?
I really felt that, and Lebanon is a place that traces its legacy to the Phoenicians, which were the ancient traders.
Big traders.
Of historic times, and at one point, I was sitting in a traffic jam in Beirut, and all around me, I saw these little mom-and-pop shops with all named the last name of the person that owned them, whether it was mm-hmm. grocery store Frederick or salon George. It dawned on me that I was really business illiterate, and so I really needed to go to business school.
So do you still think that business makes the world go round, that it's the driving force, even after the kind of pullback from adulation that we've seen in the last year?
Well, I do think it's one of the catalysts for sure. And for a country like Lebanon that's emerging post-war, I really think that that's going to be one of the key forces that drives them from developing country into developed country.
Nami, thanks for your call. Amit Shah, I want to put this to you because you've made maybe one of the biggest leaps of any of our guests or callers tonight, from J.P. Morgan to Teach for America. I understand you recently had to take a pistol off of a student. You're headed to teach in, did you say Compton?
Compton, that's correct.
So
it was actually a metal bar that was broken off of a desk that was going to be used by a student in a fight after school.
My mistake. I'm sorry, but not the kind of thing you would typically see on the trading floor or you'd hope to see on the trading floor.
That's very true. I think it's been a very eye-opening experience here in the South Bronx where we've been doing our training. Classroom management has been a big issue. A lot of our students are very, very challenging and just come from a variety of different socioeconomic as well as academic backgrounds.
And what does it make you think about the 90s mantra that business drives everything? Does business drive what's going on in your classroom in the environment that affects it most directly?
I think that the business is an important aspect of anybody's life, and whether it be at the younger levels or at the older levels, I think that a lot of these students really, there's just a big achievement gap that we see in a lot of these students from a lot of these under-resourced areas, and it's very important for them to, kind of get up to speed and get motivated in terms of their education to be able to become successful members of our society. And that's the biggest challenge that's going on right now.
Let's take another call. Chris is on the line. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you.
I bring a slightly different perspective, and I know that your guests, you know, the focus of the show is people who have been through business school. But
oh, well, it has been, but take us off wherever you like, Chris.
Sure, I'm 27 years old, and I think at the same time in the last few years as we've had these, seen the downturn in the market and more recently the scandals, I think a lot of us have had experience with the market, you know, in our 20s in a different way. Just as we've learned the name of Enron and other corporations, mm-hmm. we've also learned the names of the World Bank, the World Trade Organization, and the IMF.
So what are you telling me? Were you on the streets in Seattle, Chris, or are you an anti-globalization guy?
Well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't label myself like that, but I have been on the streets, not in Seattle. I also worked in the South Bronx the last few years with mm-hmm. young people. And, you know, people who have not benefited from the boom during the 1990s.
So what did you learn from the 90s, and what has it meant for your career choices?
Well, actually college was an important time for me to clarify, what were my own personal values and what I wanted to do with my life. And I have a bunch of friends who went into business, and some of them who got out of it and took their business skills to nonprofit organizations, which also need strong management. I went into nonprofit organizations right away. And you know, for me, it was an opportunity to learn that, for me personally, that market values were subservient to the values of love and justice and equal, you know, more equal distribution of wealth. And, you know, for me, that's what I personally did. And I think that this, one of your guests mentioned that this, you know, the scandals of late represent an opportunity mm-hmm. to learn, you know, not only about accounting practices and so forth, mm-hmm. but what was being done with all the immense wealth that was being gathered, who it went to, and where it was being spent and where it was not being spent.
Chris, let me ask you, your generation has been on a steep learning curve through the 90s, along with all of us, but you're at the beginning of your careers. Do you think it's going to make a difference in the way 20-somethings today live their lives, what we saw in the 90s and what we're seeing now?
From this point forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who knows? I think, I mean, it's like one of your guests has gone to teach, you know, after being at J.P. Morgan. I think so. I think it offers people the opportunity. Sometimes it'll force them to look at other options and opportunities.
Do you think this generation is likely to have different values or aspirations than their parents' generation?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of us have parents that, you know, have also had value shifts over time, and sometimes around, you know, their teenage or early 20s years, we're actually much farther from market values than we were if we find ourselves at this point. But I think any generation has the capacity to make that shift. And, yeah, I do think that this presents an opportunity. And, again, it could force us to make that shift, you know, just like the Depression years. And who knows if it'll get as bad as that. But, I mean, you see the kind of writing that comes out of the Depression years, the kind of work that comes out, the kind of policies that are made from the Depression years.
It's a very different tone and substance. Chris, you're terrific. Thanks so much for your call. Amit Shah, mm-hmm. are you there?
Yes.
So when do you take up your formal teaching post?
I will be in Los Angeles August 10th for induction, and then our actual teaching starts right after Labor Day.
What grade will you teach?
Right now I'm working on placement. I'm going to be doing elementary school, hopefully third grade.
And that means all subjects?
All subjects, correct.
Amit Shah, once of J.P. Morgan Chase, soon to be teaching in Compton, L.A., our best wishes go with you. Good luck out there.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us tonight. And Murad, when does your next decision point come?
Well, I guess this fall I will start MBA program at Kennedy School, and then I will come back to HBS to complete my education. And I guess that's going to be next decision point for me.
And off to public service, like now.
If I can pay my loans.
yeah, if we can all pay our loans. Thanks so much for being with us tonight, Murad Safizadeh.
Thank you.
And Kristen Fitzpatrick, you're hanging in. You've got one more year?
One more year.
And then you're off. What kind of job are you aiming for?
Something in operations or general management.
All right. Back to Procter & Gamble?
Probably not, no.
Okay. But off into a life and a career. Thanks for being with us tonight, Kristen Fitzpatrick. Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is